Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live today. This Tuesday, we're at 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Coming up on today's program, a couple of interesting headlines to take a look at. Also, what's on the trumpet.com and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as well. Also, want to continue to look at just a really important book for the times we're in, which is talking about fatherhood and how that has changed over the years dramatically, along with the family as well, but it starts with the father. We're going to take a look at that booklet and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. It's Tuesday, and this is 101.3 KPCG. We're online a couple of places, kpcg.fm, and at thetrumpet.com. As a reminder, if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at kpcgfm. We'd like to send out some tweets about upcoming programming. And if you'd like to email us, you can do that. Send your comments to comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. Grant, you came in with a burst of energy today, a little bit perturbed by the news that you found out earlier today in relation to a magazine, GQ magazine. I guess they're sort of a fashion trend male magazine of some kind. And they named their Citizen of the Year, and the big reveal, who did they name as Citizen of the Year?
It was Colin Kaepernick, and then I realized, why do I even care what GQ says when I've never read a word of it in my entire life?
Yeah, that I saw the headline today as well, and I think the cover, and I just thought, wow, that's sort of going to ruffle some feathers. He's, you know, people have different opinions about him one way or the other, or his stance on things. I do think, though, that Citizen of the Year would probably be, I think most would agree that that would not be an accurate award for the fellow.
Well, you're right, because if we simply run through what he's done, he's worn socks that depict police officers as pigs. He's worn a shirt of Che Guevara, I believe, in Miami, which is a place that has suffered extremely from communism, because a lot of the people fleeing Cuba have gone to Miami, and so of course the fans there treated him worse than anyone last season. He's obviously said he doesn't feel pride in the flag of a country that oppresses black people, and he doesn't celebrate the 4th of July, yet he's the Citizen of the Year. How does a person who hates his own country become Citizen of the Year? It just shows how upside down the world is.
Yeah, that's probably the big point there, is that no matter what people think about him, the definition of a citizen, he doesn't really follow that as what you would consider to be an upstanding citizen of a country. So anyway, pretty interesting to see. Just, and I think it just highlights, as we were talking about before, how upside down everything is. You know, just even on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today, some of the headlines that were just run through just quickly. He mentioned, Stephen Fleury mentioned this guy that's come out, and he's a transracial person. Now, that's a new thing, right? He's a white fellow, but he identifies as a Filipino.
And, you know, he showed me that. That's crazy.
Like, what kind of a world are we in? Where does it end? Where does it stop?
And he was driving that tiny pink truck that's called a tuk-tuk. I guess that's a Filipino vehicle. He's driving that around. He's got long hair with purple streaks in it. I don't know. He's also transgender too,
right?
So he's all the trans, I guess. And it's just the psychologist in the article that I read said, well, who am I to say that it's a problem as long as he's not hurting himself or anybody else? Yet the reality is he is hurting himself.
Well, it's interesting too, because some people would celebrate that as a trans racial, but then again, people get attacked for cultural appropriation, right? Where, you know, they say, "Well, you can't do that because that's not you're appropriating somebody else's culture." So it's just so confusing. That's the biggest. if you want one word besides evil to accurately depict, I suppose, our day and age, it would be confusion, right? Everything's just confused.
Yeah, supposedly, I guess the way to deal with being accused of cultural appropriation is just to go to the extreme and say, well, actually, at heart, I am this culture. This is who I am. And then people will say, oh, that's great. Actually, I'm sorry I even criticize you because you're doing a great thing here. You're transracial, I guess.
You know, if, of course, they keep making all kinds of different movies, not that this would be a good movie, but it'd be interesting to make a movie where somebody tries to say that they're you. Like they say, well, at my heart, I feel like I'm you. And so somebody follows you around and they're trying to, I don't know what that would be called, trans persona.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're actually you and they're trying to live your life. And then, you know, hey, if that's how they feel.
Well, that's really smart because then you couldn't say that he's got to back off. I mean, it is what he feels. That's how it is. And so and I think we've even had things, we've talked about it before, where people think they're certain animals. And so you can't tell them that they're not an eagle because they feel like they're an eagle. You can't do anything about it, apparently.
It just reminds me of adults acting like little kids. You know, little kids play and they imagine different things. And it's not unusual to see a kid kind of running around. What are you guys doing? Oh, we're horses, you know, and they're playing horses or they're playing bear or, you know, whatever they're into at that time. And that's kind of like, you know, it's fun, it's cute, I guess, as long as it doesn't go too far. And now adults are trying and doing the same thing, but that's like kid stuff from, you know, that kids would imagine that type of thing. But now adults are trying to live out those fantasies, I guess.
And they're actually serious. They actually think that this is a justifiable course of living somehow. I mean, that just shows you, I guess, how detached from reality this society is, that you have to go so extreme in tolerating things that basically what we're doing is allowing people to feel okay with destroying their own lives. I mean, the transgender issue, a lot of those people go and get reassignment surgery, which mutilates yourself, and then a lot of those people regret doing it. But when you're in a culture that says we can't judge anyone, we can't tell anyone that this is a bad course of action, well, you end up literally allowing people to mutilate themselves and hurt themselves.
And another thing they should do, and I'm sure, well, this does kind of happen already, is trans talent, where you pretend you're good at something, but you're not. You see that happen on all these music contests, different shows, even just, you know, if you take your kid to some sort of an event, a lot of times there's participation awards and things like that, where it's like, well, you got an award, but yeah, you didn't do great at it. So, I mean, but that's a thing that people are kind of doing too. It's just, again, not to make light of it really, but at the same time, if you just get rid of all normal boundaries, where does it stop? Like, it's just a pretend world that it can't exist. There has to be a reality. There has to be a law, and yet they're just ignoring that in so many areas.
That's the exact word I was just thinking of, boundaries. We don't have boundaries anymore. Nothing differentiates the genders, the races. I mean, God created all of us differently because there are different aspects of beauty in all of these different traits, yet we're so discontent with what we are that we always feel like we have to change it. Then when we change it, we regret it. I mean, it just shows that we do have to find a deeper meaning to life. You can't just think that somehow changing your race or whatever it is going to make you happy. If you weren't happy before changing your race in your mind or however you do it, is not going to suddenly make you happy. It's not the magic pill.
Yeah, and it reminds me of, you know, when Christ was talking about not worrying about things that you can't control. And he said, you know, which one of you can add, you know, anything to your height just by thinking about it? You can't do those things. But yet today, people think they can. Mm-hmm. You can't change your race. You can't change your sex. You can't change those things as much as they want to pretend. And so if it's something that people are bothered by, you know, it's like, well, why worry about it? You can't change it. Just work on what you can change. But today, people don't believe that. They think they can change those things.
Right. And along with that lack of boundaries comes just a total destruction of any type of standard. I mean, when we were younger, I'm not even that old, but we at least had manly figures in society to look to as examples. But today we have true masculine and true feminine examples being torn down, and you try to make it like the genders are the same, and the less masculine or feminine you are, depending on your gender, the more of a good to society you are. It's all upside down. at least in the past, I mean, you had sports figures or world leaders who you could admire, and now it's like those different types of examples are being torn down.
Well, and you think too about how much people have to worry about now, especially young people, if they're growing up and they're confused about a lot of things. There's so many more choices that they think they have to make that you don't have to make. They're made for you. You don't have to worry about your gender because it was assigned when you were born and things like that. But now there's so much more for people to worry about, especially young people growing up. And that's a real disservice to them where there's so much confusion out there where they shouldn't be worrying about any of these things. But yet they're having to decide all these things that really they can't even decide. And I think that harms the young people just in an amazing way.
Right, because there are so many other things to focus on, you know, coming out of school, getting a job, getting a place to live away from your parents, getting a car, getting married if you can, hopefully, having children. But if you have all these other ridiculous factors to consider, apparently, you know, whether your gender is the right one or whatever the latest fad is, I'm sure we're going to have more of these that people are going to present that are going to just cause more confusion. Well, doesn't the focus then drift off of establishing yourself and setting up your own life?
Yep. It makes life much, much harder. It's not getting easier, that's for sure. We're going to talk a little bit more about just some of the changes in society later in the program when we look at this book on conspiracy against fatherhood that we're looking at this week. Couple other stories of maybe some interest to you. This one's interesting. There's this time of year gets to be hunting season for some places. A Missouri girl who was 14 thought she was shooting a deer when she pulled the trigger. Turns out it was an elk. She shot an elk. It took 5 men to load it into a truck. It was in Missouri, and they have no hunting season for elk, so it wasn't legal. But they, you know, because it was an accident, I don't think there'll be a problem. But anyway, they say make sure you know what you're shooting when you pull the trigger. Good advice.
Yeah, that is. I thought the story was going to have a darker turn there, so I'm glad it was just another animal,
yeah.
a similar animal instead of something else.
Yeah, when I first, you know, they're teasing you with the headline there.
Yeah.
So I read it, and I thought, oh, no, did she shoot somebody? Or it was an elk, which is still, you know, it's they do have some herds they're trying to reintroduce there at this time, but they're not. They can't hunt them yet. And this one was actually, I think, about 100 miles away from where the other ones were, so it kind of went out on its own, I guess. But they were good about it. They contacted the authorities, and the authorities didn't believe them. They thought, oh, come on. And they went out there like, wow, that actually is an elk. And then, you know, they said, well, they were honest about it. Shouldn't be a problem. But, again, it does highlight the fact that when people go hunting, they do have to be careful. Because every year, I know up in Wisconsin, of course, they hunt quite a bit during this time of year, and there's always the tragedy of somebody getting shot accidentally. Or heart attacks actually is a big killer.
Wow.
People aren't fit.
Yeah.
And they don't do a whole lot throughout the year, and all of a sudden they're marching through the woods,
yeah.
Maybe dragging a deer or something, and a lot of heart attacks.
Yeah, I guess that is understandable. I would be afraid of shooting something like a bear, which would probably take more than one bullet to bring down. And they're extremely fast, so if they found out where you were, then they could probably catch you.
We were actually in Washington just a month ago, Washington State, and we were hiking on this a little bit of this mountain area, and I had my family with me. My daughter's 6, and we were having a good time, and I was just kind of teasing her. I said, well, you got to keep your eye out for bears, you know, in the woods here. And she's like, what? And so it really did scare her. And I said, we won't see any bears or anything. And we didn't. But then when we got down to the bottom of the trail, it said, you know, it was bear season, actually. And, like, there are bears out there. I was like, wow, I didn't know how close I was to being accurate here. But, you know, I guess they stay off the trails because they can, you know, smell the human scent. But you do have to be careful. So she was terrified because of me.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of, I guess, chance. A lot is left up to chance in the woods. I mean, you never know what you could stumble across. Sometimes when I've been camping, we've heard the sounds of wild boars in the distance.
Yeah.
Whereas if they got closer to you, you would really hope to get away from there pretty fast because those things are vicious and they'll come right at you.
Yeah, they're very vicious. And if you go to some of those areas by Russia, you can find radioactive ones from Chernobyl. They have them running around over there, radioactive
right.
Boars. I guess I don't think there's anything fascinating about them. It's, you know, I envision them like glowing green or
right.
something. I don't think it's like that, but they are radioactive. So yeah, you have to be careful when you're out there. I have thought, even when we were doing some of those hikes, about how, wow, you don't have cell service in some places. And then if something happened, how would anybody find you? I mean, it's different than our normal day-to-day life, for sure.
Well, that's why we seem to hear stories about that in the news pretty regularly, about accidents or people somehow getting lost for 2 weeks up in the mountains, and then they get rescued all that time later. And it just, I guess, it is a good glimpse of reality there to understand the situation that you're in and try to avoid doing anything that could jeopardize your own life.
Let people know that you're heading out if you're right. going somewhere. So interesting story there from Missouri. Here's one from Oklahoma that piqued my interest. And this is biological weapons simulation test planned in Oklahoma. They're going to be letting off a simulation of biological weapons. So that makes people nervous.
You selling tickets?
People are trying to get out of town. Department of Homeland Security plans to release chemicals to test the protection offered by buildings in Newkirk, Oklahoma. A legal notice appeared in the local newspaper saying the department would release non-hazardous, non-toxic chemicals and biological materials. They think, anyway. I mean, that's what they say. Like, we don't think this will harm people.
That doesn't sound good at all. I mean, that... I don't know why that's necessary. Maybe they think no one lives in Oklahoma.
I don't know.
There's not much of a risk, but definitely there are some people here.
Small town there.
Yeah.
The tests are planned for 2018. The data should help the department assess the impact of biological weapons. Yes, I imagine it would. The Department of Homeland Security announced a small town near the Kansas border will host a biological weapons simulation at the now abandoned Chillicothe Indian School. So it's abandoned now. For the particle test, the government plans to release titanium dioxide, which is described as a white odorless powder that is chemically insoluble in water, non-reactive, non-flammable, and non-hazardous. And then for the biological test, the government plans to release genetic barcoded spores of an insecticide sold under the trade name of DIPEL, D-I-P-E-L. It's not considered hazardous by the Environmental Protection Agency, which handled appropriately, when handled appropriately, they say. The assessment said the test will have no adverse impact on human health or the environment, they think. So look out, Newkirk.
Wow, that just sounds like a horrible idea. I don't know too much about those chemicals they're releasing, but it just doesn't sound right even hearing it right now. So hopefully nothing happens. Hopefully we don't become radioactive.
Yeah, if we it'll be a ways away from us, but if we were to somehow go off the air for a while, for like weeks or months at a time, it may be because of something like this. But anyway, that's going to be in 2018. There is a chance that they, may try to do something. Like some of the local people are upset about it, of course. And I can understand that. Nobody wants a biological weapons test in your neighborhood.
So I guess they're releasing these chemicals, but they're not the actual chemicals if they were using the biological weapon itself. I don't really understand how that would prove too much to them if it wasn't a deadly weapon that they're actually testing.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just like if they're going to see if the particles can penetrate the buildings or something like, I can see the dust got in or whatever.
Okay.
I don't know for sure, but I mean, you know how buildings are. They're not airtight.
Right.
You're going to get stuff in there, I'm sure. But anyway, that's going to happen in 2018 unless they change it. They're in Oklahoma, so in an abandoned school. Fascinating. Here's a story from the Associated Press. Rise in teen suicide, social media coincide. Is there a link? We've talked about this before. They tend to think there is a link.
It's almost absolutely true that there's a link, just because the amount of examples we've seen of people getting bullied at school, and then they go home and they get bullied online. And yet the temptation to stay online is so strong that they don't really cut off that influence. And then, of course, it's not just about bullying. People tend to compare themselves to each other on social media, and they find that maybe their lives are inadequate. Even if that may not be true, just the perception can hurt a lot of people.
It's like you read this already.
Oh,
that's some of the main points they bring out. But they say suicide rates for teens rose between 2010 and 2015 after they had declined for nearly two decades, according to data from the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Why the rates went up isn't known for sure, but the study, though, doesn't answer the question exactly. It suggests that one factor could be rising social media use. Recent teen suicides have been blamed on cyberbullying and social media posts depicting perfect lives, maybe taking a toll on teens' mental health, researchers say. After hours of scrolling through Instagram feeds, I just feel worse about myself because I feel left out, says Caitlin Hardy, a 17-year-old Littleton, Colorado high school senior, who helped organize an offline campaign last month after several local teen suicides. She said no one posts the bad things that they're going through. And so this idea of a perfect life makes people feel left out, or cyberbullying. I also just think just spending a lot of time there and not using your time more wisely could affect people adversely.
Yeah, whenever I heard her say that she spends hours scrolling through Instagram, that is a common thing and it is easy to do. But whenever you hear it, it just sounds like that is pretty extreme, isn't it? Because that's really what that is an obsession with what other people are doing, and it's not enough focus on living your own life to the fullest, like you say, getting away from the screens and actually doing things, not just watching other people do things.
Yeah, I mean, if it's kind of an interesting experiment you could even do, I guess, with yourself, depending on your social media use. Just, you know, don't do it for a while and see if you feel better. And inevitably, most human beings have a desire to do something. So if your time and energy isn't being taken by Instagram or something else, most people aren't just going to sit there and stare at the wall. I mean, most people would get up and do something, go somewhere, talk to somebody, read a book, I don't know, anything. And I think after a weekend of something like that, I tend to think people would have a much better Monday than if they spent their weekend just scrolling through anything on the internet or social media.
Absolutely. And even even just the things that people post online, there are so many things to even just get irritated by. I mean, if I had seen that GQ post on Twitter, I would have been angry about it then too. So you don't want to just constantly be scrolling through and reading a lot of these comments of people who don't have much better to do than just post negative things or things that aren't edifying in any way. And then that's just what our minds are being filled with.
Yeah, and it's relatively new. I mean, it feels like social media has been here forever, but it hasn't been. I mean, it's relatively new, and so we don't have enough time to even know what will lead to. And that was even kind of pointed out on part of the Trump Daily today. One of the headlines was about a write-up about saying, you know, maybe we should rethink all this, like, anything goes when it comes to promiscuity. It looks like it's having bad results. Which, of course, it is. And so somebody had a little bit of clear thinking there and wrote a column saying maybe we should rethink the direction we're going. Now, it's too late for them to change anything right now. But the same could be said with the social media or any of those things. Like, well, you know, maybe we should rethink it. You know, where is it leading? What's happening? There's some positives. There's some benefits. But it's taking over people's lives. And that's not having good results.
And it seems like we have to get to an extreme in these different types of areas before we ever even start to talk about doing something, much less actually doing something about it. So it does show that we are pretty addicted to these things. Obviously, we would try to stop them a lot sooner if we knew, like with the promiscuity issue, that over 100 million Americans have sexually transmitted diseases, or with the social media use that suicide rates among teenagers are rising. Those are plenty enough reason to stop right away, and yet we're only just starting to talk about possibly stopping sometime in the future.
It does make you wonder, like, what has to happen before people would collectively say, oh, this is a bad idea. You know, usually it has to go pretty far. It has to be pretty bad at that point to where there's not maybe a whole lot you can do. So anyway, it's a personal choice, but I think that just from my experience, If I get out and live life a little bit, I'm a happier person than if I'm not as active.
Right, and it does seem like, as well, all of these different problems that we're having, the solutions inevitably entail discipline and basically self-control. And so it is difficult to rein in a reckless spirit. So if we've already gotten really extreme into an area, it's extremely difficult to then turn around and break the habit, break the addiction. So that's usually the last solution that is ever posed.
You have to find something else to do. You have to replace it with something. You know, it's not enough to say, well, I'm not going to go on social media as much if there's nothing to replace it with. Because inevitably, we're creatures of habit, and we kind of drift back into the same thing. We feel the compulsion. We've talked about that before. There's tests and studies where, you know, people just pull out their phones. We're not really, we don't really need to. It's just a compulsion to do it. And it's funny how we have compulsions towards things like that, but not like eating vegetables. You know what I mean? No one's like, I've got to have another vegetable.
Yeah, that would be, wouldn't that be nice? If all the good things we're supposed to do were the things that were most appealing to us. Obviously, those things all go contrary to our human nature. We want to do the bad things because the bad things are always easy. But then when we realize how destructive the bad things are, even then, it's still difficult to break away from them because they're also addictive.
Yeah, the things that really do benefit us over time, and usually it's over time, we have to work at it. We have to put more effort into it. It doesn't come as easy. It's not as natural to go those ways. So I think that's probably true across the board in life. The quick, easy things, the things that are the path of least resistance, those are the things that are easier to do. But they end poorly in most cases. So, you know, if you're a parent, and you have a teenager, or if you're a teenager, really anybody, I think the social media stuff really affects the teens more than anybody. I think get out of your teens. It's not as important to you. But, you know, if you're in high school or whatever, that's kind of your life. That's your social circle. And if that's what people are really involved in, the results look like they're not great. And I think this also coincides with the breakdown of the family as well. Mm-hmm. Breakdown of a family, rise of social media, more suicides.
Yeah, and with teenagers, it can be hard for them to realize sometimes that the whole world is not about a popularity contest like it is in high school. You know, it's not, whenever you go into the workplace, you're not preening and prancing to try to become the most popular employee.
Well,
it's about, well, it works for you. I would never try to even pull that off. but obviously work is expected to get done. It matters what you produce. It doesn't matter what you're wearing that day. It doesn't matter if you have the coolest new gadgets. It's about literally what you're doing, what you're producing. And that's not something that teenagers think about a lot of the time. It's just easy to get wrapped up in who's popular on that certain day.
Right. And it can rob you of your future too, because if you're thinking long term, you do have, those are the years to really be getting your education and really be preparing for the future. And it's hard to think that way unless somebody's that's a little older is there giving you a little bit of a nudge, because you're very much focused on what's happening that day. And as we've talked about before social media really took off, whatever was going on that day kind of ended when you went home for the most part. And now it doesn't end, because you've brought the whole classroom, if you will, or the whole social circle into your life everywhere, 24/7. And that's, you know, even if you're really good friends with somebody, you need a break once in a while. 24/7 is a little bit much.
And you mentioned that this trend also coincides with the breakdown of the family. And that's really true, because how much would young people care about being popular at school if they had a strong family around them that was actually there for them and actually supporting them 100% more than any friend ever could? And then, of course, whenever the children come home, they're not allowed to just stay on a screen the entire evening, because the family government is in place, and the parents simply won't allow that type of constant contact or constantly being plugged in.
Yep, it's a lot to think about there. This is an Associated Press article, Rise in Teen Suicide, Social Media Coincide, Is There a Link? It's interesting, if you read the comments, some people are on board and say, yeah, that I can see that. Other people say no. One person, even in the article, they always have to have the person that doesn't agree, and they said, every time something new comes out, people say it's the end of the world, you know, comic books and movies and this and that, and it's fine, this will be fine. But I think back to the even the talk of, like, say, all this toxic masculinity and such, and their definition of it is all the things that they promote in the movies and in the music and everything. But so on one hand, they say depending on what the circumstance is, you know, the media or whatever would have no effect on people and what they do. But then on the other hand, they condemn the actions that people have, which are the exact actions that they see in movies and music and on social media. So people don't want to admit that what you intake into your mind is going to come back out in your actions to some extent.
Absolutely. We see that all the time. And once again, the hypocrisy is evident. We see that in society all the time now, where people criticize one thing and yet they say that, oh, we should have no restrictions on the exact influences that are causing the problem. We never are able to get back to the cause of any of these problems, because the cause means that we would actually have to change. If we pinpointed the cause, if we got to the root of the situation, we would have to make tangible changes in our personal lives. We'd have to change the type of entertainment we're consuming or the type of hobbies that we enjoy, and that's pretty difficult.
Yeah, nobody wants to get rid of those or look at that, but it does affect what people do as well. Make sure you stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. Top story is from Richard Palmer. A religious revival in Europe? Feeling threatened by Muslims, Europeans are seeking cultural cohesion in their Christian heritage. Bible prophecy foretold the trend. That's what always happens. Groups have to identify. They have to have a common identifier. And if one group is attacking you and they're one religion, then the other group's going to really come together in their religion. So you're going to have this battle, this age-old battle of Muslims versus Christians. It's going to happen again.
And that's the cycle that we've always seen, just periodically those two religions clashing with each other, specifically Catholicism, not just Christianity in general, but you see that all the time. I mean, that's how they do it, especially because they have an eye on Jerusalem. That is a site that both religions hold dear for differing reasons, but still they're fighting over the same type of territory. They're fighting for world domination. You can see both religions getting heavily involved in national politics, which then makes them even stronger. And you just see it easily building to another clash, just like it's always been in history and just like it's prophesied to happen again.
Check it out. A religious revival in Europe. Related to that, the Holy Roman Empire and prophecy. And will Europe rediscover its Christian identity? Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury. A whole lot of topics. He touched on a few headlines. One of them being that Germany is taking its gold back. They want their gold. I think of leprechauns. Everyone wants their gold back. But it's true. A lot of nations are doing that type of thing, Germany in particular here. And because of the stability that it represents. Also, there's a write-up on the Trumpet about how certain nations that are not friendly to the U.S. are trying to trade oil with the Chinese currency now and then convert it to gold and bypass the U.S. So that's a bad deal for the U.S. dollar.
And again, another example of how the world is hostile toward America, and they're tired of American dominance and they want to find a replacement. A lot of nations are willing to work together, despite what their different beliefs might be, internally, to topple the top dog. And that's how it's always been. That's why empires only last so long. It's obviously they have their own mistakes, but there's also enemies that are just waiting for them to collapse, and they're waiting to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and if you've read much over the years about the U.S. dollar, it really is propped up by being a global currency. And, you know, that could, if we lost that status, that would could do a lot of damage to the economy. So something people don't like to think about, but it is a reality. Of course, this time of year, a lot of people want to spend money, more money than they have probably, and buying gifts. A new survey showed that 7 out of 10 people would prefer to not buy gifts for each other. Just don't do it.
That I guess is understandable. I mean, a lot of people go into, what is it, close to $1,000 of debt on average. It might be more than that just for the Christmas season. And you buy gifts for people that maybe you're just kind of like acquaintances with who happen to be going to the same Christmas party as you. So you can understand why people might want to get rid of that old habit.
I think 10 out of 10 wanted to receive gifts, from what I recall, but 7 out of 10 did not want to buy them.
It sadly just doesn't go both ways. It
doesn't go both ways, no. Well, I think people, I don't know, I think people are fine to buy gifts for others in most cases. It's just, do you have the money for it? And then being forced to do it is the irritating thing, where you feel compelled, like, oh, I've got to buy something. And you don't want to, instead of actually doing it because you want to do it.
Right. I mean, that's what the Bible says, too. Being a cheerful giver is what is important. Actually giving doesn't matter much, but the attitude behind it really does.
That's true. You caught me drinking my coffee.
Sorry about
there.
That. Yeah, I was a little too quick that
left
time.
Left me in the hang to dry there, hang out to dry. Today's November the 14th. By the way, here it's a little bit of a rainy day here, a little bit of a misty day, a little foggy, kind of hard to see. I like these days once in a while. I wouldn't want to live like this all the time, but we get so much sunshine here. I like a little bit of mist and a little bit of clouds.
It kind of just makes you want to curl up inside and just maybe look out the window but not actually experience it.
Yeah, makes you glad that you're not you know, a construction worker out in the elements or something like that, or out on the roads today. But today is November the 14th, and here's a couple of things that are interesting from this day in history. 1851, Herman Melville's novel Moby Dick, or The Whale, Moby Dick's a better title, was published in the United States almost a month after being released in Britain. It's a classic. You ever read through Moby Dick?
I actually haven't, surprisingly. Of the books I read, that has never been one of them somehow. And I would have thought I would have covered that in school, but it just never happened.
I've never read it until, and I didn't really read it, but I kind of did. In school, we didn't have to. We had, you know, assigned reading, but that one, for some reason, didn't make it. Or maybe we could choose, and we didn't choose it. I don't recall. But then they have, like, the children's versions that you can read to the kids. They're a little easier. And so I've read Moby Dick to my kids, but it was the kids' version. So, you know, I could kind of say, like, yeah, I sort of read it. But, you know, it was still, I don't know, it was probably 100 pages, but it was definitely simplified for like a child's attention span and things like that. So I've read that. I think if I've read this correctly, and forgive me if I'm wrong here, but Starbucks coffee is actually named after the character in Moby Dick of Starbuck.
Oh, really? Yeah. I'm not an expert, so you're probably right.
I've read that. Now, if I'm wrong, I apologize. I know that's a, you know, got to get your facts right there, but I think I read that, and I did not have enough time to go back and look it up, but I'm pretty sure. Because I remember reading it and thinking, Starbucks, that's the coffee place. And I thought, I wonder if there's a correlation there, and I think that's where they got it from.
Is that a heroic character, at least?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he's trying to be like the voice of reason, if I remember correctly. You know, they're chasing this the white whale, and it's a suicide mission, but they got to get that whale. So anyway, I'm trying to remember it all from my children's reading time about I think it was about 2 years ago. But anyway, classic book there. One other note. This is interesting. 1972 on this day, Blue Ribbon Sports changed their name. Do you know what they changed their name to?
Nike.
Yeah, Nike. Yep. 1972, they used to be called Blue Ribbon Sports, because I guess Blue Ribbon means you won, right? You get the
yeah.
And they changed it to Nike, which has actually become much a better name, I think.
Isn't that like a Greek god or something?
Yeah, I believe it is. Yeah, I think that's what they named it after.
I kind of prefer Blue Ribbon, actually. Yeah.
They should like go retro and do like Blue Ribbon shoes or something.
Wouldn't that be cool to have like a crisscrossed blue ribbon on the shoes instead of the Nike logo? That'd be a pretty cool logo, actually.
That would be neat. They're worth a lot today. They started basically in their garage, from what I recall reading about some of their history. In November 2015, Forbes named Knight, I think it's Phil Knight, the 15th richest person in the world with an estimated net worth of $28.1 billion. So they sell a lot of stuff. I mean, and it's amazing the markups on those products. You know, if you go to a Foot Locker or some retailer, your average pair of Nikes, you know, depending on what you buy, obviously, what are you looking at? $80 maybe, give or take. And then they sell them on sale, you know, a lot of times, and they still make money even when they sell them on sale. And Nike makes money selling them to the store for the much cheaper rate, because they have to mark it up, obviously, and the shipping and all that. So yeah, at the end of the day, you say, how much does it cost to make these bad boys? It's like a couple of bucks.
Well, yeah, especially if they're using labor that might not be above board, then it's probably like a dollar to create those shoes sometimes. But yeah, they have actually even transformed professional sports, because it's not even so much about athletes winning championships now as it is about them building their personal brand and then getting a shoe contract that is literally 10 times as much as their actual playing contracts a lot of the time.
Yeah, they make most of their money on their shoes, which is so funny. We were talking about that earlier. Well, a lot of these athletes want to get all political, and Michael Jordan was the smartest about it because they tried to get him political years ago. He said, look, Democrats and Republicans both buy shoes.
They do.
So if you're a businessman and you want to sell your wares, it's best not to offend half of your potential market.
And it is almost like the media is demanding of athletes that they get socially conscious, I guess they call it. Although I would call them unconscious because they have no clue what they're talking about. It doesn't work. It's not their area of expertise. It's not what they're paid to do. You can tell just the second they open their mouths that a lot of them have never even looked into it, yet they feel like they're expected to say something.
Well, and it's interesting because if you went back to, say, college and you took some of these guys, and some of them are do very well. They're scholar athletes, but not always. And if you took, like, say, the political science majors and said, we have a very special guest today. It's your fellow freshman. He plays basketball. He's going to lecture you about the intricacies of some political aspect of the country. I think they'd all fall out of their chairs. Right. But now, because they've made some money and they're on national TV, they've got an opinion that matters, apparently.
Right. That's a great point. I wonder how many of them could actually pass like a basic U.S. history test. You have to know the history of the country to be able to project into the future how different policies might play out. And yet, they don't have a clue of those type of things in almost every case. I mean, there are some athletes who might know a few things, but it doesn't seem like they have informed themselves before giving their opinion.
Yep. They feel like they have a platform and they want to use it, but some interesting comments there. And even in a lot of cases with some of those athletes, they do have sort of an inner circle, and they got a lot of people in their ear telling them things. And I think that's probably where a lot of those opinions come from. They know what the socially acceptable opinion is, and that's one they're going to have for the most part. Very rarely do you see somebody go, oh, no, I don't agree with that at all. Because they don't want the pressure of having to stand on their own, I think, is the truth.
Absolutely. And I sometimes just envision them scrolling through Twitter, seeing what the loudest, angriest people say, and then sort of hopping on that side. And that's the extent of the research done by a lot of these athletes about the different social issues. Because they never vary from the tagline of the media. They never stray away from what the activists on social media say. So you can just tell there's not a whole lot of independent thought taking place.
Well, and too, if you took some of the ideology that they have and applied it to their own lives, I guess it would come and they would say, well, we're into equality. We want everything to be equal. I'd say, well, great, equal playing time. The 12th guy on the bench gets to play as much as you do.
Equal pay.
Equal pay, equal quality. Well, no, hang on now a second. You know, it only applies to things that they want it to apply to. And that's like the society we're in where it's situational ethics all the time. Yeah, it applies sometimes, but not always. And not to me and, you know, things like that.
Well, that's like how they're criticizing Mr. Trump's tax plan and saying somehow that it gives the biggest break to the rich. And they should be like, oh, wait a second. I love that idea. That would literally save me millions of dollars because I'm getting way overtaxed as it is.
Yeah, like sometimes when they're protesting the 1%. And I think, well, you may not be the 1%, but you're a lot closer to the 1% than most people are.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. There's just not a whole lot of awareness there, and that just highlights the reason why if you don't have the information necessary, you don't say anything about it. And there's only a few people now who seem to be following that that mantra. That's how anyone should be. I mean, you wouldn't, like we've talked about before, you would not go into, like you say, a political science class and start lecturing these experts because of something that you saw on Twitter. You know, that's just not realistic. You would not go into a machinist shop and tell him how to fix up a part because that is not something that you've ever looked into. And yet, for some reason, when it comes to these social issues, people are allowed to look at a video that they saw online and form their entire opinion based off that.
Yeah, lots of opinions, not a lot of truth in matters. And for the rest of the show today, we want to talk a little bit more about this great booklet that ties into all these social issues you see happening, this changes. And really, it begins with an attack against fatherhood. And the name of the booklet is Conspiracy Against Fatherhood. Yesterday, we talked about how much families and fatherhood has changed over the last 70 years or so, really dramatic changes. And why such a radical change in fatherhood? Where did the change begin? It began in a place you probably wouldn't think too much about, but that is with evolution, the theory of evolution. And it talks about how a lot of issues are looked at through the evolution eyeglasses. It says the August 23rd, 1990 feature article in Time magazine was titled, How Man Evolved. Notice this is an absolute. It says no room for disagreement whatsoever, even though evolution, of course, is an unproved and unprovable theory. To support their faith in evolution, Time included an article by a Harvard geology professor, Stephen Jay Gould. Here is what he wrote. The Kansas Board of Education voted 6-4 to remove evolution and the Big Bang Theory as well from the state's science curriculum. In so doing, the board transported its jurisdiction to a never-never land, where a Dorothy of the new millennium might exclaim, they still call it Kansas, but I don't think we're in the real world anymore. So the thing you probably notice about that quote is that he didn't present any facts to support his case. He just ridiculed and mocked the other side. Tried and true method of many people that want to down-talk creation or God or the Bible.
It's the classic fallback of anyone who doesn't have the facts and the truth on their side. They turn to attacking those who disagree with them. Although I do always laugh when I read the language of that quote.
Yeah, it's creative. It's creative if nothing else. The booklet points out, in other words, if you believe in the Bible's account of God as creator, you are not in the quote-unquote real world. As the author said, the author thinks you are on the edge of insanity or beyond if you believe the Genesis account. And, of course, the Bible teaches creation all throughout. So that so you could say, okay, so what's the connection between, you know, evolution and what's happening with fatherhood? Well, when you get rid of God, as you get rid of a creator, you get rid of absolute law. And so fatherhood can be completely flipped around and gotten rid of, which we see happening. Families can be completely turned upside down and destroyed. And it does get back to evolution, although if you're not thinking about it, it'd be easy to miss the connection. But when you get rid of absolute law that has to come from a creator, then we're on our own. And it's not a good place to be if you're on your own in this society.
And on top of that, God is the ultimate father, the creator of all human beings. So if you dismantle and you try to debunk the existence of the top father, why would it matter at all at that point to get rid of the physical representation of him, which is every father on this earth, if they're doing their job the right way?
Yeah, and if you understand the way God designed the family, and it talks about it throughout the Bible, in Ephesians 5, you know, it goes into the roles of the way the family works. And at the end, it says, you know, okay, well, this is a mystery, but I'm talking about Christ in the church. I'm talking about the spirit realm, the physical family teaches you about the God family. And like you point out there, Grant, if the father's physical role in the family is destroyed, how do people relate to God the Father? And that's what he's called in the Bible, God the Father. Is that just like a neat thing, or is he literally a father? And a lot of people don't really know what a father is today.
Yeah, and that's because they don't look into the biblical definition of a father. The father is described throughout the Bible as he's a God of judgment, but also of mercy. So he does take a stand against things that are evil, but at the same time, he's very patient. He's very kind and tender. Extremely different from what we heard yesterday from that author who said that either you're a brute and you're violent in the home to assert your dominance, or as a man, or you should just be absent from the home altogether. That's not at all how the Bible describes a father in relation to God or in relation to the men who should be following God's example in that way.
Yeah, it really, if you look at the nations too that have tried to dismantle the family, and it's communism for the most part, they've had horrible track records of human rights and all these other things that again, we see this clash of ideologies, even within certain sectors, the liberal sector mainly, I guess, of our society, where on one hand they want all this human rights and all this, but then they want to destroy families, but then they want to support, you know, religions that hate what they're saying. All these things are clashing together. And if you destroy the father and you destroy the family, there's no way you can hold up human rights. You're destroying the human race, really. But yet they're trying to make those two things work together. It's impossible.
And we have talked before about how when the father is removed from the home, that does put the children at a huge disadvantage. Obviously, it's a big burden on the mother to have to try to raise children by herself. But even when you're talking about human rights, if you just take away the father, if you undermine his role and his authority, well, who else is going to stop the family from being abused? Who else has the physical strength and the dominance needed to protect in the home and to protect from people who would try to abuse that family?
You can hear a lot of stories. I just saw one the other day about, you know, people that grew up without parents and they were in a foster care situation. In most cases, it was not an easy life and it was difficult for them. And but isn't that what they're all pushing towards? You know, get the father out of the home, blend the families together, anything goes. You know, you're destroying that firm foundation that a child would have. And again, it does get back to, you know, the thinking gets back to this evolutionary theory that, well, you know, why do we even get married in the first place? Why do we have families? Who decided these things? And if you think that it just somebody dreamed it up one day somewhere along the evolutionary trail, then again, that opens the door to say, why can't we change it all now? But if you believe in creation and you believe in a God that created everything and is a father, as you said, and has a law, then you know that there's roles we have to fit into.
Yeah, and you mentioned the foster homes or orphanages. How do children wind up in that situation in the first place if it's not because of their parents who got together to procreate, then not being there, whether it's by tragedy, which is the rare case, or the parents just simply abandoning the children? They created the child. They then have a responsibility as the two people who physically made the child to care for that child. It's the natural biological progression, and yet we're trying to defy that somehow. Only a man and a woman can create a child, and it only makes sense that they would then pitch in to care for that child after the child is already there.
Yeah, we see that being that traditional role being destroyed, and particularly with the father and the mother as well, and it's causing so many problems. I mean, even that statistic we saw yesterday, I couldn't even believe it almost, that over 40% of all births in the country are to unwed mothers. That's not a great start for the kids. Talking here about this just evolutionary theory and how that's destroyed the foundation understanding about family. It says that if you can't believe the creation account, can you believe any of the Bible? That's the point. So this really is about destroying faith in God, it says. But the evolutionists insist that you have faith, and it is a faith in their theory. And if you don't, their attack becomes very perverse. I get very upset about it. But again, you can look at even the social changes in this nation. They say, well, you can't believe in that, but the Bible teaches. But they demand that you believe in their twisted anything-goes theories.
Despite none of the facts being on their side, that stat about over 40% of mothers having children without the father being around, doesn't that just reveal right there a crisis of manhood in the country? That we are on the one hand pushing toxic masculinity as if that's a huge problem and as if we need to either rein masculinity in or destroy it completely so that we get rid of these sexual predators. But then on the other hand, we wring our hands and we cry about how these mothers are having to raise children on their own without government assistance. That's usually the substitute that the left has for the absent father. But isn't that exactly why this is a crisis? Because we're telling people that being truly masculine, taking responsibility for your actions, caring for those who you created, that's not even necessary anymore. Those are the types of messages we're sending, and yet we turn around and say it's a horrible problem once the exact way that they have been preaching is followed.
Right. It's so fascinating just to really stop and think about what's being taught with the breakdown of the family. And that in it's a deconstruction of the family, really, is that, you know, the idea of a father that is teaching God's law in the family and is the authority because he's teaching what God teaches, that a lot of people would not like that. Yet they will surrender their thinking over to just a general media that tells them something, or a professor or somebody that is going to tell them very specifically how they should or shouldn't live. They're listening to somebody. You're still going to follow somebody. Wouldn't you rather listen to a father that loves you as opposed to people that don't even know you or care about you?
Isn't that the paradox? People don't like to listen to anyone they should listen to, and yet there always is someone who is influencing us in some way. It's just like we choose complete strangers to have that power over us instead of a father who has been with us since birth and has raised us and spent that time to raise us the right way. That does show just a lot of how stubborn and foolish we can be if we're not valuing family the way we should, especially.
Yeah, and I think you made a good point there about just, say, the welfare system and all that, you know, at times can help people, but it can be abused too. If you just look at the destruction of the role of the father and see, like, if you set it up like dominoes, like what other dominoes have fallen because of that? You know, it's interesting just to stop and think about it. There's so many things that happen because the family has been destroyed and because the father was attacked and isn't around. And now you've got all these other problems. Is it better? Has it gotten better or has it gotten worse, and have more problems been created? I think we all know, just with a little thinking, things have gotten far worse.
And the welfare state is probably the cause of the gigantic national debt we have. That's the part that you could never really pay back. There are things that you could cut now. People would rather cut educational funding or military funding, but don't get anywhere near touching their welfare benefits, or else there will be a civil war.
It's really an interesting booklet, and we're going to talk about it more as we go through this week. But just this section here, Conspiracy Against Fatherhood, looking at how evolution has played such a major role in the destruction of not just the family, all sorts of things that the Bible teaches how to conduct our lives and the rules we need. But once that's thrown away, we end up in a situation like we are today. So really fascinating booklet. Make sure you check it out. It's free at thetrumpet.com. Conspiracy Against Fatherhood. And there's a lot more to talk about there, and we'll do that throughout the week. Thanks for joining us today on Trumpet Radio Live. Myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon. Have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.